Jimmy Connors, number one in men's tennis through much of the mid and late 70s, won a total of 8 Grand Slam singles titles. In 1998, he was inducted into the Tennis Hall of Fame. Last year, he joined me to talk about his book, The Outsider, A Memoir. And I asked him if it was his mother who planted the idea that he could become good enough to beat the best.
Yeah, she gave me everything, and she gave me the game, and she gave me, you know, the attitude at the beginning that, you know, you have to go out and work hard and put everything you have into it, that really that takes just as much effort to be number one as it does to be number 100. So, you know, when you put in the time, you put it in and you work hard.
Your success and your ability to entertain the fans notwithstanding, at several points in The Outsider, you write, and I'm quoting now, "It seemed as though almost the entire tennis world was against me." Why did it feel that way? What was that?
Well, there's a lot of things that happened early on in my career. I think, number one, that, you know, my mom was, you know, handled me and gave me tennis. And it was okay for a father to do that to their son, but not really for a mom at the time. I was kept out of the French, so there was some lawsuits and there was some animosity towards federations and so forth that, you know, that I was used kind of as a pawn in. So plus my style and my attitude was a little bit different than a lot of the old guard that had come up and gotten tennis to where it had become. You know, the Lavers, Rosewall, Roy Emerson, Arthur Ashe, Stan Smith, you know, a lot of those guys were from a different era and a different attitude. So I think that had a little bit to play in it, too.
You describe an arresting scene from the Queen's Club tournament in London in 1972 when you were nearly penalized, basically for bouncing the ball too many times before you tossed it up to serve it. Tell us a little bit about why that was happening.
Well, it was my first trip to London, and going and playing in the Queen's Club and getting ready to play Wimbledon for my first Wimbledon was very exciting, but I kind of got in a routine. I guess I don't know if it was the stress or the anxiety or the excitement or whatever that, you know, just could not stop bouncing the ball. And I didn't know at the time. I found out since then that, you know, I have what's called OCD, which is obsessive compulsive. But looking back, it seems that with a lot of things that I did and the way I handled a lot of things, having to go the same route or take the same elevator or, you know, walk the same steps or whatever, the same route to a restaurant, you know, I look back and it was a little bit more than I ever expected.
I was intrigued by your discussion of two particular matches in 1974, both against Ken Rosewall, during which, and I'm quoting again here, you say, "I reached perfection, something that never happened again in the rest of my career." What was that like?
You know, to go out and to play the finals of Wimbledon, you look at it as saying, I'm in the finals. I certainly have to take advantage of this, and because I may never have this opportunity again. To strike the ball like that and to on that stage and against such a great player like Ken Rosewall, not only at Wimbledon, but almost three months later at the U.S. Open in the final there again, it was a dream year. There's no doubt about it. But in reality, that's what I was striving for every time I walked out there. I reached it, but I was trying even harder after that. You know, why can't that come again? Where is that? You know, it's in there somewhere. You know, it was just unfindable. So then you have to figure out ways to win more than just having, you know, the 100 or 110% perfection every time. So that was a new experience.
It's interesting that those two matches that you characterized as perfect were against Ken Rosewall because, boy, if there ever was a player who represented the old guard in terms of his demeanor and his manners and everything else, he was the guy.
No, he was. There's no doubt about it. He was not only a great champion, but a great gentleman also. And our styles clashed, and so did our attitudes and our personality. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. I was not a popular champion at Wimbledon when I beat Ken in the finals there. They were expecting him to win his first Wimbledon, and he was 39 at the time. And for me to have walked off there winning that was it wasn't a popular victory in a lot of eyes, but it was pretty good for me.
Just 4 lines into The Outsider, the book, readers encounter this phrase, "screw 'em." I guess some of your fans will be surprised they had to wait 4 lines for that.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, using that as the title, but I didn't think that would go over well. I say things like that because, you know, at the beginning, it wasn't all good. I came in at a time when things were changing in tennis. And to come in and to have my attitude, that's the way I had to play. But certainly along the way, we found something special, the fans and myself. We connected in a way that over the course of my career was an incredible feeling. They came in and won me more matches than probably I should have. You know, I owed them a lot, that's for sure.
You say in the book that if you could still play at a competitive level, you're as competitive now at 60 as you've ever been, and you'd be doing that. You'd be out there on the court. That's your nature. These days, what are you doing instead?
It's certainly difficult to find something to do to replace that. To be honest with you, I don't think I'll ever find it. To play on the major stages around the world and against the great players that I was able to play against at such a high level. So I don't look. I'm trying not to look anymore. And I was lucky to do what I did at such a high level, and maybe one thing is good enough.
Hall of Famer Jimmy Connors' book is The Outsider, a memoir published by HarperCollins, and he joined me from NPR West. Jimmy Connors, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
To read my review of Jimmy Connors' The Outsider, please go to onlyagame.org. Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabue. Our technical director is James Trout, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. Our final word is from the athlete in this week's program who has the biggest heart. You'd feel that way, too, if for the rest of your life you were guaranteed endless bushels of carrots and lots of rest. Enjoy your retirement, Zippy. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems, at pewtrusts.org. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR.